I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you start, manage, and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 239. And joining me in Studio A, I'm in Studio B, is our good friend Brian Burke. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Griff. How are you today?
Why, I'm just ducky. Another week closer to moving.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Are you really ducky? Or that was a bit of a sarcastic ducky.
Well, I think I'm making progress. When you sell a house, the buyer eventually moves in, right?
Yes.
And that's called the deadline.
It's a real deadline.
It is a real deadline. And I wake up in the morning in my bedroom and say, this is not my beautiful house. These are not my beautiful pieces of furniture that I'm leaving behind. Oh my God, what have I done? Many a day goes by. So yeah, I think I'm okay. I've emptied out maybe a half of the garage. I messaged Lee Mirabal last week.
Ah, how is Lee?
She's okay, I guess, because I was thinking of her on our old eBay radio show. We did a thing about decluttering, and Lee had this theory that what you did, it's actually a strategy, not a theory, is you took a space that was a mess and you divided it up into quadrants and you focused on one quadrant. And so I said, I'm going to do that. That was, 8 years ago? So no quadrant progress for 8 years. But she'd be proud of me now because I'm into quadrant two and making good progress.
Oh, that's good.
I took over 300 shirts to Savers. They were shirts I bought years ago and just kept them hanging in the garage. And
right.
Oh, and I learned some stuff. I had some stuff that I bought. It must have been a Goodwill. And this was a long time ago. They had a stack of Christian Adogie, sort of Ed Hardy looking apparel, t-shirts and hoodies and other stuff. And it was all brand new with tags. And they were selling it for $10 to $20 a piece. And I bought a bunch of hoodies, you know, extra, extra large brown hoodies that have rhinestones and fingers and crosses and blood roses and that Christian Adogie writing. And I thought, who knows, someday these will be worth money. And the person I was with at the thrift store said, I don't think that stuff's ever going to come back. And I thought, well, it's what is it? I spent like $30-$40 on a bunch of stuff. So I've completely forgotten about it. And it was hanging up on a rack that was, you know, behind a rack and behind some stuff. I said, oh, I remember buying these. I said, I'll just donate them to Savers. But I said, oh, I should look first. So I went on eBay and looked. And the exact same hoodies are selling for $200 to $300.
Whoa. And now you're thinking, I should have bought more.
I should have, yes. That's always the case. You think you should have bought more, but you have to settle for what you did.
Yes.
So that made my day.
I bet.
Yeah.
That's good. Some stuff that doesn't have to go to Savers and it'll put cash in your pocket. So I have to ask you a question. So are you thinking about using time away, or are you going to just shut down your store when you go move?
Yeah, 3 weeks time away.
So you'll leave everything up, just go time away 3 weeks.
Yep.
Okay.
I've only got 50 or so listings right now.
Okay.
I don't think I'll have more than that. I'm just not focusing on the selling end of it that much anymore.
Yeah, because it's something that I'm sure our listeners would like to know what your strategy is when doing a move where you know you're going to be away and not be able to really get at inventory and things like that.
You know what my strategy is? You know what the ostrich does with the head in the sand?
You were doing that a few weeks ago when you weren't really thinking about, oh, this is really happening, I'm going to move.
So overwhelmed. I don't know how any of you go through this. And I know we have lots of sellers who go through this on a regular basis. I haven't moved in 20 years and it's really painful.
I read an article just a few years ago and they said, moving is actually one of the most stressful things that you go through in life. But then soon you'll be moved and you'll be sitting in the sun, pool in the backyard. Yeah.
But anyway, enough about us. We should talk about the show.
Who is on the show, Griff?
Well, I know who it is. It's Chief Sustainability Officer Renee Morin. And we also have an interview with a seller we know and love named Joe DeMarco.
Oh, Joe's going to be on. That's fantastic.
Hubcap Joe. We're going to talk about sustainability. Of course, the news is on hiatus.
It is.
Until we got some news. And any news from the community this week?
The thing that I wanted to do was talk a little bit about a part of our site in the community called Ask a Mentor. If you are in the eBay community, go to community info. You can go down and there's an Ask a Mentor link. And if you click on that, you'll just see questions that people have asked. So if you're a new listener and new to selling on eBay, check out Ask a Mentor underneath the community info tab, because we get questions to our mentors, and the mentors know the site well. They've been selling on the site for a long time, and they answer them. And it's everything. I just glanced at a few. Somebody asked about, how do I reach a watcher? And then somebody else was, I want to change the shipping label, but I've already printed the first one. So what do I do? Or printing an invoice. So those were three questions that came up just in the last week that they're pretty straightforward when you go in and you look at the answer. But if you don't know how to print an invoice, it can be frustrating because you don't know where do you go. And if you're an experienced seller and you post actively in the community and you want to be a mentor, let any one of us who are out there in the community know, and we'll evaluate your posts and tenor and all of that and see if you're appropriate to be a mentor as well.
When you say mentor, there's an actual chat area where the only people who can respond are these designated mentors.
Correct. You can post a question and ask a mentor, but the only people who can answer are the mentors.
And I got to say, they're really smart, because I go in and then check that, you know, we pretend we know everything about eBay. They say, oh, Griff and Bride have been there forever. Oh, you guys, you know everything. You're a walking compendium of knowledge about eBay. And I think, yeah, you really don't know who those people are, because there are some people that they get no glory and they know everything. They have answers that astound me. So yeah, check it out. I mean, maybe you'll never come back and listen to us again, but it's all right. All we care about is that you're actually succeeding on eBay.
Yes. And the community area is a wonderful place to connect with others and the mentor. And maybe in the future, I'll pull some questions out and we can even read the question. Like, if we're ever light on ask a question, I can always grab a mentor question.
If you haven't been there, it's a nicer place than Facebook or Twitter.
It's friendlier.
It's friendlier. It's definitely not as divisive. So yeah, you should check it out. Anyway, it's time to talk sustainability. Our topic this week is sustainability. I know it's something that's on the minds of a lot of eBay sellers, especially, not limited to, but especially younger sellers, what we call, rather in a general term, millennials. They care a lot about sustainability, and running a business and keeping an eye on sustainability presents its own challenges. Joe DeMarco, known to all on eBay as Hubcap Joe, has been on our show in the past. Welcome back, Joe.
Thank you, Griff, for having me on your podcast.
We wanted to talk a little bit about your eBay business and how you handle the issue of sustainability with what you sell. And I don't think it's any secret. Your name gives it away. You sell hubcaps.
Yes, Griff. You gave away the biggest and worst kept secret. But as far as sustainability is concerned, first of all, I've been selling on eBay since 1999, which is 24 years, and eBay has really evolved. And as far as the sustainability aspect is concerned, I actually started young picking up hubcaps on the side of the road, which in itself was leading to sustainability because I was cleaning up the side of the highways for free. In addition, I was recycling the merchandise, reprepping it, and putting it back into use. Now, recently, I made a large purchase of a lot of old classic hubcaps that came from all the way out in California. Most of them were good, but some of them were damaged. So what I did with the damaged ones was I took them apart, because those older ones have several different type metals that are actually pieced together.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Like your heavy spinner hubcaps from the 60s and 70s. The ones that are unusable, I separate into die-cast metal, stainless steel, and tin. And then I bring them to the recycling place that actually pays for the quality metals, such as die-cast and stainless steel. So that is one aspect of how I am increasing sustainability, though indirectly.
Well, you can make a little money on the side doing this, because as you say, depending on how you sort this out, you get paid for, I'm assuming it's by the pound?
Yes, the various metals have different prices, and they even vary depending which scrap metal guy you go to, because you have to watch out. Sometimes they get a little bit iffy on that kind of thing.
What percentage of your inventory do you find when you make a bulk purchase like this is probably not something you're going to offer on eBay?
Well, most of the stuff I cherry pick if I can. Like, for instance, I go to junkyards, and they save all the hubcaps for me. And I go there and I go through the pile and I only pick out the ones that I want that I know I can move on eBay. Anything that's junk, I just leave behind. I'm not paying for junk. However, there are some instances where I do bulk buyouts from other hubcap dealers, like the guy in California, and you have to buy everything as a lot. And that's how I get some of the chunky ones.
When did you purchase this lot? Was this one we talked about?
I purchased it in February 2022.
And there were a lot of pieces in this lot.
17,000 pieces. My biggest purchase in history.
And how do you store it all?
Very carefully, Griff. It was a lot of work, and it took 4 trucks to bring here.
Oh, yes, I remember now. We have an episode where we talked about this.
Yes, it was one of those once-in-a-lifetime buyouts.
And you still have some of this inventory, I assume?
I certainly do, but all the choice pieces were sold on eBay, and I made my money back much quicker than I ever expected.
Your business seems by nature to be, as you said at the beginning, all around sustainability in the sense that you're profitably recycling merchandise that otherwise would just sit there. How important is that aspect of sustainability to you personally?
Well, I personally love old cars, and I love to see old cars being kept on the road. And when I say old, I'm talking older than 1980, and nobody is making these parts anymore. There's only a limited number of parts available, and it's really important to keep them in use and not scrap them if they're usable. And the guy that sold me the 17,000 hubcaps last year did it on the condition that I would not scrap them and that I would resell them and keep them out there in use.
So he was a fellow aficionado of old cars.
Yeah, he knew something about cars, but he just didn't want to really get into the nuts and bolts of listing items online.
Since we've talked last, how has business been? You know, I think we talked in the middle of the pandemic, but how are we doing now?
Business, even last year, 2022, was extremely strong for me. It was my busiest eBay year in my 24 years, but you have to keep in mind that it's probably because of the big load I bought, and I became a listing machine. I know what sells, and I was cherry-picking all the hot caps out, wiping them down. I was listing them, and they were selling quite quickly. Now, all the hottest of the hot pieces have since been sold.
And you have what's not so hot left over?
Yeah. I have a lot of mediocre stuff and fair stuff that I'm willing to sell cheap.
How long will you hold on to a pair of hubcaps before you'll think about having to get rid of them?
Oh my gosh, I hate to even think about that. I don't like throwing anything out unless it's damaged. It's not unusual for me to pick out a cap out of my rack that I have to sell, and on the back of it, I will see the date that I put it in inventory, for instance, 1994, and I'm still holding on to them.
Yikes. Okay, yep. Well, that's long-tail merchandise if I've ever heard of it before. I mean, that's amazing.
Hubcaps don't go stale. They have a very long shelf life.
So even if it's not hotly sought after right now, over time, as supplies diminish, someone's going to lose a hubcap or two, and they're going to come to you and say, thank God you have these, even if they've been in your inventory for 20 plus years.
There's an old saying, Griff, there's an ass for every seat. And I sure hope that applies here.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought of it that way, but it makes sense. Joe, what do you see for your business this year? How's it doing?
Business is doing pretty good. I'm still actively purchasing lots, and I even have a guy that works with me who goes out and he searches all around for these deals, and he actually buys them for me, and he adds a few bucks on for his time and trouble, which he's entitled to, and then he resells them to me, and then I put them up on eBay.
So business is good. That's good to hear. What about when it comes to shipping? Is there any sustainability concerns about the way you ship?
I'm lucky enough that I have an eBay store, so I get the quarterly coupon for the free eBay shipping supplies, which I always use. And in the kind of business that I'm in, Griff, I get a certain amount of returns because people do not read the size of their alloy wheel, even though I clearly have a picture of the alloy wheel in the listing and the cap that goes on it. They still screw up. So they'll return the item to me in the same exact box that I sent it out in. And then I'll just put the box aside, and the next person that buys the alloy wheel cap gets that same exact box. It goes right back into service.
The eBay shipping box store sells a box that's suitable or is going to work for hubcaps for you?
No, Griff, it doesn't. But they do sell the boxes for the alloy wheel center caps. The small ones, the 8x6x4 box, is excellent. and I usually spend my whole quarterly coupon on that size box.
Yeah, I use a lot of those boxes too, but not for hubcaps, obviously. Well, Joe, I want to thank you. It's been a pleasure reconnecting with you and glad to hear the business is still doing well. And I had no idea that you could take apart and recycle the different metals from hubcaps. That was actually a part of the business. So I learn something every day.
Thank you for having me on your podcast, Griff.
You can find Joe DeMarco on eBay under the user ID Hubcap Joe. Listen, you need a pair of hubcaps. That's the first place you're going to go. We're talking today about our topic, which is sustainability, both when it comes to e-commerce and also how eBay approaches sustainability. We've heard from Hubcap Joe, and he talked a little bit about how he keeps sustainability in his business, which by its very nature, like so many other eBay business, is sustainable. I wanted to get their eBay take. So joining us now is eBay's Chief Sustainability Officer, Renee Morin. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Griff.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Always love to talk about sustainability.
Renee, eBay recently published its re-commerce report, and since Earth Day just happened, I wanted to have you on the podcast to tell us a little bit more about the report itself. But first, I want to know, did it survey buyers or sellers?
Actually, we surveyed both this year. This is our third re-commerce report. Traditionally, the last two, we surveyed sellers. This year, we expanded it to buyers globally as well.
Did you find anything different?
Not so much difference, just a nuance in what the motivations are for participating in re-commerce. And just to make sure we're on the same page, when I say re-commerce, we're talking about the selling or buying of used and refurbished goods, pre-loved goods that are out there. So helping to give them a second life.
Let's talk a little bit about the report. What are some of the data points that we saw this year in the re-commerce report?
The re-commerce report, we're asking our sellers, like, why do you participate in re-commerce? Why are you taking things that have had a previous life and putting them online? And the number one reason in three reports running is the economics, the financial aspect. So it allows really anybody over the age of 18 on eBay to become a seller and to make a little extra cash. And sometimes, though, that actually translates into launching a full business. I think just that toe in the door of, like, does this work for me? Economics have been a little bit more difficult lately than before. COVID happened. And we're seeing more and more folks joining into re-commerce. I think it's here to stay.
So financial reasons, that's a big reason why people, buyers and sellers, focus on eBay then.
Yeah, absolutely. And we split it up into demographics. So Gen Zs and millennials also are interested in putting extra cash in their pockets, especially if they can save a few dollars by buying a used sweater or whatever the item happens to be versus new. That's one advantage. And if you're selling it, you make a little extra money. But, you know, I'm a sustainability person, so I was also thrilled to see that number two reason for sellers participating in re-commerce online is because of the sustainability benefits.
Which extends the life of a piece of merchandise longer than maybe even the manufacturer or the creator of that merchandise might have intended.
Yes, I think it can exactly extend the life of a product. When you're extending the life, you're not throwing it away, right? It's not going to the landfill immediately. It's giving that same good a new home. And with the refurbished program, so these are items, mostly electronics, home goods, things of that nature, you can actually extend the life beyond what the original manufacturer might have intended. And that, again, saves us extra trash in the landfill.
I love talking about Gen Z and younger generations in general, as I have now become part of the older demographic, much to my chagrin.
Me too.
But to them, it's actually, in my conversations with sellers and buyers, there was a long period of time where it wasn't an important consideration when you bought something. You bought it because you liked it, or it was hip, or it was cool. This seems to be a top line priority for younger people when they're purchasing something, is how long can I keep this? What's its lifespan? And if it's something that's going to be depleted of its use before I believe it should be, I won't buy it.
I think that's definitely one of the drivers. The younger generations are more climate conscious. They're more value driven. And we see something about climate change and adverse weather almost every day on the news or TikTok or Instagram. And it's top of mind, both in social media and in traditional media outlets. And so I think that the younger generations feel an additional responsibility. I'm a part of an older generation myself. So I also have these same thoughts. But we did see a trend that the boomers Gen X's are not quite as sustainability minded, but they do still care. Over 90% of our respondents said that sustainability was either very important or important to their decision making.
Yeah. And it seems to me with the obvious evidence of not being concerned about sustainability now increasing all around us, whether it's climate change or the fact that recycling is not as easy as it used to be because we've still got too much plastic. If it's a single-use plastic container or implement or something, that it's going to be really difficult to get that recycled. So they think twice about buying things like that.
Yeah, I think it is becoming more common. And sort of maybe the slightly opposite argument for the same endpoint is there used to be a little bit of a stigma attached with buying secondhand goods, secondhand clothing, and now it's cool. So I think that's another driver that we're seeing. You know, it's the stigma is not there any longer. And if you can find that unique t-shirt from that band that was from the 80s, that's cool again. I think there's a lot of components in helping to bolster re-commerce, which, you know, eBay's been doing since we started over 25 years ago. So it's not new for us, but it's great to see that younger generations are still participating.
Part of my love of eBay was learning how to love numbers. And I know the re-commerce report has numbers in it, and I think some of them are pretty interesting. I was hoping you might be able to tell us a few of them as the top line one. So for example, the economic impact we've had when it comes to avoided waste, what did the re-commerce tell us?
We're talking about the report, which is survey-based, and we talk to our buyers and our sellers through the survey. In addition to that, as our sustainability function as a corporation, we do have a goal around re-commerce that touches three key metrics. So one is the positive economic impact. And really what that means is, are you saving a little extra money? Are you making a little extra money? We also have a goal around avoiding carbon emissions. So when you're purchasing a good that's already been used, there is a portion of a new good that doesn't necessarily have to be made, right? So we're avoiding carbon emissions in that aspect. And same with the waste. Part of a new product was never made, so therefore it never ends up in the landfill. So fun fact, last year, 2022, we as a community of buyers and sellers of eBay saved over 73,000 metric tons of waste from going to landfill or incineration. Break that down for you. That's over 10,000 school buses. That's a lot of stuff.
That's a lot of stuff. Is that 10,000 school buses with or without the kids in them?
I mean, I hate to say it's without the kids. Or maybe that is a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing.
We don't want to throw them away.
I mean, when you think about it, 73,000 metric tons, that's a ton of avoided waste. Good for us. So the metric tons of avoided waste, and that is a lot of waste avoided. It focuses around the actual commerce part of the business, the buying and selling. But what is it that eBay does that or has changed about the way it operates as a corporation that has helped have an impact?
Yeah, well, again, going back to the climate change is top of mind. eBay has its own carbon reduction goal. What we have committed to is actually third-party verified. And that means that we have committed to reducing our own emissions from our data centers and our offices by 90%. By 2030. And so this is based off of a 2019 baseline, so not that long ago. We're making good progress towards that. Some of it has to do with putting more renewable energy into the grid, which helps to reduce emissions, obviously. And then there's some other things that we're focused on that has to do more with natural gas and diesel and lots of little details that we could get into. But I think the top line here is that eBay wants to make sure that we're operating as a sustainable company while we're also offering a sustainable business model through re-commerce.
What are the challenges for a company like eBay when it comes to not just making those or setting those goals up, but then trying to reach them?
It takes a village, as they say. I think that's really true in sustainability. When we're talking about our offices, we work with one group of folks. When we're talking about our data centers, it's a different group of folks. We actually have a goal for the delivery of buyers and sellers' products. So the seller are all over the world delivering to buyers all over the world. And so we've been working with our delivery team to get our arms around what that data actually look like. So throughout the company, we've got a lot of support and a lot of folks who touch sustainability on a daily basis. Even if when they joined, they weren't sure that was going to be part of their remit, and now it is. And so it takes the whole company really to move in that right direction.
So Renee, before we go, I wanted to ask your opinion about something. Last year, the government in Germany enacted a law called the German Packaging Act, for which for a few months here had sellers a little bit concerned because it looked like there was a lot of onus that would be on them to actually be in compliance. As we know, this has kind of changed, so sellers don't have to worry about it, especially if they're shipping internationally through the eBay International Shipping Program. But there's been a lot of talk and speculation among our audience about what this might augur for the future with countries enacting laws similar to Germany. And do we see this as a possibility? And if so, what kind of challenges that could present to eBay?
Yeah, there's been more attention from global legislators on sustainability aspects. In Australia, for instance, where I was able to actually travel to and meet our Australian team in person recently, there's legislation on the docket for single-use plastics to be eliminated on marketplaces. So I think we're going to continue to see these show up in different ways. As a third-party marketplace, we want to make sure that we're protecting and helping our sellers as much as possible. So they may not all apply directly to eBay, but regulation is becoming more a part of the story than it was, say, 10 years ago. And I've been in this business, not at eBay, but in sustainability for over 20 years. We're going to see more. And some of it has to do with disclosure. People want to know about the companies they're buying products from. Even here in the United States, there's a proposed rule from the SEC, which oversees all of our financial disclosures, about including climate metrics in those 10K filings. I don't think it's going to go away. I think each country is going to deal with it a little bit differently, though.
Well, stay tuned would be the advice here. But don't exactly. Be surprised as you see the concern about sustainability grow over the next 10 years and beyond. Is there a place where people can go to if you're an eBay buyer or seller who wants to learn more about eBay and sustainability?
Yeah, there's a couple places, actually. So if you're a seller and you know about eBay Academy, we have a module that's for training on some sort of introductory sustainability business practices. And then if you want to learn more about the entire story, you can go to ebayinc.com, so our corporate website, and then search for the word impact, and it'll lead you to all the stuff we've been talking about today.
And we'll put links to both of those in our transcript summary overview for episode 239, so look for it there as well. Renee, thanks again. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Griff. Appreciate it.
Renee Morin is the Chief Sustainability Officer here at eBay. We've been talking about eBay and sustainability. Over the next year, we'll be introducing or revisiting this topic more and more, specifically as ways that sellers can make their business on eBay more sustainable.
You got questions?
Well, we've got answers. And Brian, our first question this week was sent to podcast@ebay.com by a seller named Dave, who, unlike last week's seller John, who tends to be long-winded, but wasn't too bad.
But he wasn't very long-winded last time.
Anyway, Dave is short and sweet. He says, "Hi there. Is there a way to create a new invoice for combined shipping on the app? Thanks, Dave."
Well, Dave, in the app, no. But there's always your mobile phone's web browser.
That's right. It works.
In your phone's web browser, go to www.ebay.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. Click on Classic Site, and it's in very small text.
You can see it.
But you can see it. You'll see Classic Site. Click on that, and voila. You can now access all of the features you normally use on your desk or laptop, including sending invoices.
Yeah, it's the same navigation and everything. With one caveat, if you're using a mobile phone, you're going to be pinching in and out to see. Keep that in mind. But you can actually access all of that functionality. Just make sure you're on the classic, not the mobile site.
The other thing that I've used that for is to get to the advanced search capability, because again, it's not on the mobile app, but you can get to it that way. Well, our next question is from seller Phil, who emailed this to podcast@ebay.com. "Hi, Grifton and Brianden."
What does that mean?
I don't know. We might find out.
Yeah. Are we superheroes now or legendary
yes.
characters of like Hogwarts?
I kind of like it.
All right. Anyway, go ahead.
"I have a question about combining shipping. I have a handful of listings where I have multiple quantities available. These are old dead stock items from a scope mount manufacturer. My problem is that I have customers who want to buy more than one, but it adds first class shipping to each individual item. For instance, I just sold 10 of one item to someone and it charged them $40 in shipping. These items weigh roughly 7 ounces each. The pricing issue has been resolved with the buyers by sending or receiving offers, but I wonder how many sales I miss out on because people think the shipping cost is unreasonable. I have it set to calculate shipping, and I have the correct weight and dimensions for these items, but it, for some reason, charges the shipping individually and expects me to ship this in one box first class. I list and manage my listings from my phone on the app and have searched high and low, but can't find out how to adjust the shipping setting. Any help will be greatly appreciated. Thanks, Brian and Griff, in advance for your help. Love the podcast, Phil. And Phil's store name is The IAFL. The IAFL. Griff, what do you think?
Well, he's right. It is a bit of a quandary because the system as it's set up is not going to automatically assign accurate postage costs or an appropriate class of service upgrade for combined shipment of purchases from either separate listings or, in his case, the same listing. The challenge is, of course, is that the system's not set up to do this. It would have to make assumptions about different box sizes, different weights, how you pack can make a big difference, different classes of service, which you're willing or not willing to use. For example, a USPS first class package on one single listing of 12 ounces, but when you combine them, as he's figured out, you would end up with more than 16 ounces. It no longer qualifies to be combined, blah, blah, blah. So first off the bat, this is one advantage of free shipping, which is that if you include a part or all of the shipping into the item price, if you can do that, then you've taken shipping out of the equation. They never have to think about shipping. So for those listings, when I have items that are pretty light, I just indicate one or more options. But there are other things to consider here that might help. And one of them is if he's talking about multiple quantities in a single listing, consider volume pricing. So if you have where a listing, you know, buyers tend to buy 2, 3, or 4 more, you can utilize the volume pricing tool and set up a discount that's going to more than cover your cost of shipping, but give them a discount by focusing on the item price. And that's the key here. Think about the rest of online commerce. Nowhere else in the world do you have to worry about combining shipping and, you know, then having to readjust or send a refund for the balance. Like I had to do yesterday because somebody bought 2 different listings of film, which I was able to put in one box. In an ideal world where we have perfect artificial intelligence algorithms that do all that work for you and make the right assumptions, yeah, that could be possible. But right now, because there's so many factors that we're hesitant to make decisions about on your behalf, that you're going to have to utilize something else. The other thing is you can create shipping promos where you can apply shipping discounts to a listing so that what they're focused in on is discount and not like, oh, you're combining shipping, I should get X. You're offering them that discount up front.
If they buy X, they know they're going to get a discount or a flat rate.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you an example out of my own selling because I'm about to do these again, I think. Every year, IKEA for the last 3 or 4 years has created these IKEA bags that are in rainbow colors for Pride Month in June, and they're very popular. And at the store, the first time they did this, it was during just before the pandemic, I think, and we went in, oh, was it the year before? I can't remember. You couldn't get them online. So I went into the store and I bought like a huge volume crate of these, took them home. And then I had to figure out how I was going to offer them because I knew I got them at a good price that were like, I figured about 99 cents each. And, you know, some people were offering them for $25. Those aren't selling. Some are offering for around $4 to $5. Those seem to be moving. And I'm happy with that margin. That seems like fun. But I'm thinking about shipping. And I did a few tests and realized that there's a lot of people who didn't want to buy just one. They wanted to buy more. So what I figured out is instead of indicating it was going to be first class shipping, I just used a standard shipping option as the shipping. So, you know, it's not really tied to anything like a class of service, like first class. And then I figured out that if people are buying 5, 6, 7, or 8, I figured these scenarios in my head. And what can I put in a flat rate box? What can I put into a priority box? What can I fit into a priority envelope? Can I fit 5? I tested all this. I realized I can offer these discounts. And so I set it up as volume pricing and it was free shipping. And the risk here was I need to sell enough of these to one buyer to pay for shipping. And for those where I'm making a lot, if somebody just buys one, I can stick one of these into a first class envelope, padded envelope, and it's going to cost me, I think at the time, $5. So, you know, but volume pricing was the key to success here. So I was able to offer pretty steep discounts to incentivize people to buy more of them, and it worked out. But my point in talking about this to this great length and boring everyone to tears is that you have to do all of the possible scenarios beforehand and then plan out a series of discounts, either with volume pricing or with shipping discounts, or with, where you can, adding a piece of the shipping as a fixed price. So, you know, you charge a dollar for, it's going to cost you more, but if you're selling multiple quantities, that can end up bringing you more money in the way of shipping as well. So you got to think of all these things beforehand and then let work that out, because you're not missing anything here, Phil. There's no setting that you can turn on. There used to be, and I think it's still available, a legacy setting, but I don't think it works really well. And I don't advise people to go in and use it. Anyway, that's what I think.
You started off by discounting the items as opposed to discounting the shipping, using the shipping discount. That's your starting point would be, can you discount on uncombined item purchases?
Yeah, the volume pricing, right. Yeah.
And then look at shipping.
Right. But that was for an item that it was clear to me, my own testing experience and then watching other people that were selling multiple quantities of this particular item, that people wanted to buy more than one. At the end of the day, when I sold out, and I eventually sold out of them, looking back on the records, there were maybe 5 to 10% of the sales were one single item. Everything else was multiple quantity. And in some cases, people were buying 25 bags, which for me was great.
Huge.
Because I could take 25 bags and I could put them in to a medium flat rate box with no problem. And I was making money on those.
Cool.
Anyway, our next and final question for this week is from eBay seller Jessica, who sent this to podcast@ebay.com. Good afternoon. I'm a new listener, but quickly catching up on the last 6 months of podcast episodes.
Great.
I was wondering if you have already done an episode on where sellers should upgrade to a paid subscription service like an eBay store versus the standard business hub, and how to choose which service is the best deal. Been considering the subscription, but not sure if it's worth the monthly fee in addition to the individual listing fees for over a certain amount of allotment in listings based on the subscription. I have a few hundred items listed on eBay, but 1,400 on other sites and many more to list. Any guidance on an episode number, if you will have an episode on it in the future, that would be appreciated. Thanks for hosting these podcasts. They're very informative, entertaining, and mostly important, relay accurate information since you work for eBay. Well, that's sometimes debatable, but thank you. Oh, P.S. Griff, I'm also from Massachusetts, so I enjoyed the weekly dose of sarcasm. Also, just finished listening to the episode where you mentioned we sound like sheep when we call ma, pa. A truer statement has never been said. Best regards, Jessica DeRoy, eBay name, Jess Jan Shaw. A fellow Massachusetts listener. Thank you. Well, this is a tough one, yeah. Jessica, our first recommendation is to read up about eBay stores, obviously. There are several pages on eBay that will help you make a decision about opening or not opening an eBay store. You can find them in Seller Center and in the Help Center. I'll put some links in the summary overview for episode 239 as well.
And Jessica, you'll also need to do a little bit of math.
Oh, yeah.
By using the information on the eBay selling fees help page, you'll be able to make a pretty accurate comparison between the cost of a store subscription against the cost of not subscribing to an eBay store.
Yeah, based on your current selling activity.
Yes, and that includes where, by categories, you tend to list most of your inventory, since the final value fee for most categories vary based on whether you're a store subscriber or not.
Besides the potential cost saving and selling fees, Jessica, there are other things than just money you have to think about, because the benefits that a store subscriber receives can actually be value add. You have to think about things like you get a free allotment every quarter of eBay branded shipping supplies, including boxes, a newsletter that you can send to buyers, and of course, something that a lot of sellers consider invaluable, a customizable storefront for your own business on eBay, where you can create your own store categories, your own store look, your buyer can search through your store and just your store alone. You said you had a few hundred items, but it sounds like you got more from other sites that you want to list, and we love you for that. These are things to consider. Now, she's right. We should do a show about this.
We should. And the other thing to think about, Jessica, is you can start by doing a subscribe to a store, and there's two options to subscribe. One is to do an annual subscription, and so you get a significant discount if you sign up for a year.
You're in contract for a year.
But then you're in contract for a year. Or if you pay a little bit extra, you can go month to month. You can test this a little bit too. You can go and say, okay, I'm going to do the month to month version. It's going to cost me a little bit more. Set it up. See, does it make sense from a structuring the categories? Do you have items that naturally someone, if they buy one, they see an adjacent type of item, you can then bucket those in your store, and then they can find those items in your store right next to each other without doing two separate searches on eBay.
Yeah.
So there's some advantages to having a store, especially if you've got different types of items that people are going to be interested in.
Now, we used to have, I remember years back, we used to have a store calculator.
We did.
Where you entered some information.
And we pestered John into bringing it back.
And that he told us the reason why it went away is because the fee structure got a little too complicated to keep updating that, because we started branching out and charging different final value fees for stores as opposed to non-stores by category. And then that became really complex behind the scenes. So we just never did it again. I think we should still make a stab at it, but we don't. So the best way to do this, as Brian says, is to do the math based on your current selling and then based on what you want to accomplish, and then to maybe get your toe in the water with a starter subscription per month so that if it's not working for you, you can back out without penalty.
And remember, if you do the basic, you'll get a discount on your final value fees.
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of the math, because you get an allotment of free listings and you get discounts on, I think it's almost every category, there's a discount on final value fees. You know, if you sell in one category mostly, then that's going to be an easier thing to calculate. But that's all our questions for this week, Brian.
Well, like Jessica, we want your questions.
Yes, we do.
You can get them to us two ways. You can call your questions into our voice line at eBay for Business. Just call 888-723-4630.
Oh, we love to hear your voice on 888-723-4630. And the nice thing is you can put your voice on that hotline any time of day. Leave a question or comment, and who knows, we just might put you on the air.
And if you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And now it's your 3-point weekly podcast checklist. Brian,
check the announcement board at community.ebay.com for up-to-date seller news every day.
You've worked hard this year. Admit it, you need a break. Why not plan to take some time away? You can put your store on vacation for up to 30 days with eBay's time away feature.
Need to review anything in this episode? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we referenced during the episode.
And on our next episode, Rebecca Michaels, our dear colleague, will be back with us. She's the Director of Community and Seller Engagement here at eBay, and she's a regular on the podcast. She's going to be here with us to talk to an eBay up-and-running grant seller, Joe Sorrentino.
We'd like to again thank our guests this week, eBay Chief Sustainability Officer, Renee Morin, and eBay seller, Joe DeMarco.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.